My name is Mark Charles Little Owl. I am from the Three Affiliated Tribes, the Mandan, Hidatsa, and Arikara Nation for Berthold Reservation. I am from the Twin Buttes segment, home of the Mandan or the Nuwata people. My Indian name in English is The Last One. I don't know how to say it in Mandan. I don't want to mess it up. Good. I currently live in Bismarck, North Dakota, in the Bismarck Mandan area. I've been back now for about a couple years. I have four children, four boys. Gabriel is 17, Silas is 11, and Philip is 9, and my little guy Lazarus, he's 6 years old. Little Owls, my little owl boys. And I went to high school in mostly, actually I grew up here in Bismarck from preschool to sixth grade, and then half of my sixth grade I went back to Newtown to live on the reservation from sixth grade to my senior year in high school. And then halfway through my senior year I moved back to Bismarck and graduated from Bismarck High School in like 1997. And then I worked for a few years, and I went to college at the University of North Dakota. But before that, I went about a year and a half at United Tribes Technical College, and my major was small business management. So getting my journals out of the way, then I was able to transfer to Grand Forks at UND. And I went to school there and got a bachelor's degree in social work, and continued on for 2 more years to get a master's degree in social work. So that is my alumni, is UND. Mm-hmm. After graduating from college, I guess one of my dreams or goals was to always to get educated or to get education and come back and help my tribe or my people in some way. So I was able to work for a clinic. At the time it was called the Manitowi Health Center in Newtown, and I worked as our behavioral health director for our tribe for a little over 3 years. And my last year, we actually got moved into the brand new building, the Alba Woods Memorial Health Center. And I was working there. It was a really good job as the director of behavioral health and helping the department with getting staff and creating policy procedures and just getting it started. And there was always a behavioral health unit, but it was like maybe one or two people. We were trying to get it a lot bigger and get it going. Mm-hmm. And then from there I actually went to work at Spirit Lake, Fort Totten Reservation, Spirit Lake Nation, as the director of social services over there for almost a year. Mm-hmm. And then I guess political things, personal things was happening. So I ended up going, leaving there and coming back to Bismarck here, and that was about a couple years ago. So I worked at the Fort Abraham Lincoln Foundation. I worked with Tracy Potter, and I kind of helped him with his Mandan library, some of his research. I did some part-time stuff there. Then I eventually started working at the MHA Nation satellite office here in Bismarck. It's our the tribe's outreach satellite office here. And I was working underneath the Twin Buttes segment representative, Councilman Barry Benson at the time. So, but with the new election this past November, I actually was appointed as acting director for the satellite office in November. So since then to presently or currently now, I've been the acting director of the Bismarck satellite office. So.
Thanks, Mark. Now, just share with us a little bit about where you grew up. First, as you know, in your childhood, I think you said Fort Berthold, and then what that experience was like leading up to your teenage years and through to your adolescent years.
Well, I born in Hazen, North Dakota, but my mom and dad lived in Twin Buttes, North Dakota, on the reservation, mm-hmm. which is our south segment of the reservation, probably the smallest segment of our tribe, of our reservation, out of the 6 segments. And I lived there until I was about 4 years old. My dad was a council member back in 78, 79, 80, and 81. He served on the Twin Buttes Council. His name was Willard Little Owl Sr. and my mom was Mary Young Eagle, Little Owl, but she was from the Cannonball Standing Rock Reservation. And my grandfather was Ralph Little Owl. And my grandma was Clara Grinnell. Mm-hmm. And then my great-grandma was like Maddie Grinnell. So kind of she was like the last full-blooded Mandan that was alive. And kind of, I think she's in the Heritage Center in the Capitol. So I would like to think I come from good stock.
Yeah.
but that's kind of my family, my father and grandparents and mom. But I lived in Twin Buttes until I was about 4 years old. Unfortunately, my father had passed away when I was 4 years old. And my mom, she was from Cannonball, so she decided to put up residency here in Mandan, North Dakota. And unfortunately, she took the loss of our father, her husband, you know, pretty difficult. Unfortunately, she turned to like drinking, alcoholism and stuff for coping. And she was a young mom in her mid-30s, late-30s, of five children. You know, it was kind of tough on her. So we had different aunties and uncles, you know, helping my mother watch us. Unfortunately, then we had gotten removed from my mom through social services or child protection. We were removed. And I'm the youngest of the five. I have three older brothers and one older sister. So I remember quite vividly, I guess, having the police show up and having these white, I was like four. I've never really seen like a white person I can remember besides the grocery store man in Twin Buttes or in Halliday. I was lived out in the country, and I'll never forget this social worker guy. He was had red hair, red beard, and glasses, and he was really white. And he said, "Come on, little guy, come on now." And he was all of us were running around screaming, fighting because we had strangers in our home that we didn't know, and we didn't know they were the police, or we didn't know they were social workers removing us from my mom's home, or it was like a three-bedroom apartment. So they took us, and they took me and my sister into one foster home, my brother Wade to another foster home, and my older brothers, Milton and Willard Jr., to another foster home. So we all got split up in three different foster homes. So that was kind of, I guess, living in the reservation until I was 4 years old. It was kind of just a few memories here and there, not too much, but moving here to the Bismarck Mandan area was kind of like a rude welcoming, I guess you could say, that I can remember, by being taken away from my mom and stuff and put in foster care. But then eventually my dad's older sister, and unfortunately after my mom did pass away, and I was seven due to a car accident, and unfortunately it involved drinking and things like that, so she passed away when I was seven. So to lose my father at four and to lose my mom at seven was really tragic and very, I guess for a little boy, it was really, you know, it was kind of at a loss and didn't really know what to do or who was going to take care of us. But my dad's older sister, Lois Little Owl, she lived here in Bismarck, and she took us all in, and she wanted us all to be together. But we had a lot of family who wanted to take care of us, but it was like, well, I can take my sister and my brother, or I can take the oldest, but they all wanted us to live separate lives. But my aunt was pretty adamant about having us all live together and being raised together. So, and that's another story with my aunt, because she was like really old school. She grew up in the boarding school days. She was really strict. So we had to start, you know, doing chores at a very young age, and we had to listen, or else, you know, we were, you know, disciplined. Like I said, she was back in the day, they, you know, were spanking was where it was like, I don't know if it was legal or allowed, but it happened a lot, you know, belts, vice waters, whatever was close, she would always, if we disbehaved or weren't listening or being disrespectful, we sure got, you know, spanked. And at a young age, I learned right away to listen and to be respectful of the things that she taught us to do. And then, and I guess different aunties kind of got after us verbally. We had a few uncles get after us verbally and physically, you know, like spanking or maybe a belt or something once in a great while, or more or less to intimidate. But we learned to respect our elders right away and be, you know, if someone tells us to do something, we do it right away. So, then growing up here in Bismarck, until sixth grade was, I guess I got to have a lot of, most of my friends were non-native, or they were white and stuff. And then I didn't really, I know sometimes I could see myself as being like, I guess different in color, but kind of treated differently. I kind of thought by maybe different classmates or by maybe like teachers, I felt I was picked on more. And I could have friends who kind of goofed off a lot in school, and they would never get in trouble. And if I tried to goof off or say something, I always got disciplined or sent to the principal's office, or I had to have a conference with my aunt and the teacher and stuff like that. But and then when we play, sometimes we ran into kids that weren't nice, or kids we didn't like, or they didn't like us. They would call names. But when it came to me, they would call me, prairie nigger or something really, and I was like, prairie nigger, I'm not black, but I get in the summertime, I get really dark. But that's kind of when I first heard those names. And then we ran into some at a young age, like some older like college kids or young men that were non-native who were drinking would see us, our family be riding bikes or raising heck or whatever, and they would call us Paiutes. And to them, they thought that was insulting, but there's a Paiute tribe down south or southwest, but I think they were trying to insult us and call us names, and they were calling us Paiute, but we're not Paiute, we're Three Affiliated. But that happened kind of throughout, I guess, growing up here in Bismarck, man. And I guess they talk about racism or being treated differently and stuff like that, and as a kid, and my aunt was really against that. She always really spoke up if she ever seen that kind of stuff happening when we were in school or out in public, or she would really really stand up against that. She'd be really get upset. But after sixth grade, I ended up moving back to the reservation, not Twin Buttes, but to Newtown. Mm-hmm. And I lived with an aunt and uncle, a Delvin Driver, senior, and his wife, Kay, and their children, when I was in sixth grade, half of my sixth grade year. And initially they were kind of like foster parents, but they were relatives of mine down the line. So I took them as aunt and uncle. And then eventually I ended up calling them mom and dad because I lived with them for so long. I got to ride horse. We lived 20 miles south of Newtown, like really out in the country. We didn't have a phone. We had a TV, but we had a few channels. And on good days we might have like two or three channels. And we had to haul our water in a water truck, our old pickup truck. We had to haul water. So we had to be really... kind of conservative of our water. Of course, we still took showers and everything, but we had to not be wasteful, and stuff like that. So then we had horses, or Delvin had horses and cows, and we had to do the chores like feeding the horses, feeding the cows, branding. We'd go hunting a lot and stuff, fishing a lot. So I learned a lot of like the country, love horses, love to ride horse. In my high school time in Newtown, I was actually on. High school rodeo team. We were bull riding, and we actually rode bulls, like normal bulls, like in a rodeo today. Mm-hmm. But they weren't as good, but some of them looked pretty scary with the horns and their humps. Yeah. So for a couple of years, I did that. I was a bull rider in high school rodeo. Not too many people know that about me, but I did that. I did end up getting hurt in Dickinson one year. That kind of ended my career, I guess my early career in bull riding. But I still practice with our friends and with different cows and bulls and bucking machines. But I never went after that as I got into my senior year in high school. But of course, back home was more accepting. We were the majority. We had a few non-natives that went to school there, and I didn't treat them any different. There were like a lot of ranchers and farmers and stuff, kids. But I got along great with everybody. Mm-hmm. And I didn't really, color wasn't a really big thing to me or whatever. Mm-hmm. But definitely coming back to Bismarck after high school. I graduated in Bismarck here, but my senior year in Newtown, I left to come back to Bismarck. My senior year, half of my senior year was over with, but I came back to Bismarck and I graduated from Bismarck High School, from BHS in 1997. Mm-hmm. And it was, but since then, when I graduated high school, I lived in seven different foster homes from when my parents passed away, from when we were taken and removed and put into foster care, and until I graduated. I counted it a number of times, but seven different foster homes before graduating high school. I guess when I think of my younger years or adolescent years or elementary high school times, mm-hmm. and that was kind of, but it gave me that passion to go into social work, because I thought these would be great to have. It's still pretty tragic. I still remember that day, it wasn't too long ago, having this non-native social worker, you know, had red hair and a red beard, which I've never seen before in my life. When I was four, I was like, this is crazy. It's like an alien to me. I was like, what the heck? You know, but I always remember it would have been great if there was some sort of minority, some sort of color, if it was like a Mexican person, or if it was an African-American or an Asian, just somebody minority, somebody with color. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't have been like, you know, it wouldn't have been so scary, but it was pretty scary to work with them. Again, this is my mindset as a four-year-old. Mm-hmm. I thought it was really scary to get picked up and taken out of our home. Mm-hmm. And then being the youngest and seeing your siblings, your older siblings, you know, running and fighting and crying and screaming at these people, you know, it was really traumatic. Mm-hmm. So that's something I'll never forget. But then as I got older, I started to realize that, you know, what was going on with, you know, there were child protection services looking out for our best interests because our mom wasn't there to take care of us. She was, at the time, she was might have been drinking or left us. My older brother was watching over us at that time. So, but as I'm getting older, I understand that. And of course, being in the profession now, you know, I understand what was going on. It was like for our best interest and our well-being, because our mom wasn't, you know, she was coping, unfortunately, negatively with drinking to cope with the loss of our father, her husband. Mm-hmm. But that's what helped me actually go into social work as too for college. I really wanted to help people. I wanted to kind of help kids who went through something similar throughout my lifetime and growing up K through 12, just a different foster home and different placements and things like that. I really wanted to help out. That was my passion, was to help out, I guess, not only Native American kids or American Indian kids, but other minority kids as well.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Oh, that's great. So you mentioned, talked about family, childhood. So what were some of the teachings that were taught to you? Because you had exposure to different families. Did you see a lot of different kinds of teachings, values in that?
I did. Like I said, my aunt, when we were at a younger age, she was really to be respectful to our elders and to like help women, just like I guess how to act. Like if people, elders come, give your chair, give your seat, give them water, don't ask, just give it to them. You know, I give them coffee, you know, try to help them out or whatever. Like with, we had a lot of older, because my aunt was an older elderly lady, and she had a lot of elders coming to visit her for church things and stuff. We had help clean up, and she wanted us to like, it was just respectful to make them comfortable here, when they came in and stuff, take help them with their bags and things like that, help clean up. And then she also instilled into us about, you know, I guess I was, like I said, at a young age, I was doing laundry when I was like in first grade. And I remember in first grade, I was like mopping the floor, doing dishes, taking out trash, mowing the lawn at a very young age. Like these are the things that we, you know, cleaning out our cat box, getting our laundry ready to go into the laundry room or whatever, sorting them out, colors and whites and things like that, making our bed. We had to make our bed all the time. And this is something I remember in first grade doing like pretty regularly. And if we didn't do a good job, we had to do the dishes over again. Or we had to, you know, maybe we were assigned to doing yard work for a few more days. Or, okay, you're going to mop the floor, you know, for the rest, you know, for the rest of the week because you're not doing a good job. And I had to, there's times where I had to do that and at a young age, and that having to learn that. And now I have boys of my own, and, you know, just telling them to take out the trash or vacuum the room, and it's like, oh my God, it's going to kill them, you know. And they're like, you know, older now. And I was like, Jesus, I remember when I was a young boy, I couldn't talk back, or I couldn't complain, or else I'd get disciplined, and I'd get after. But so for my aunt, at a young age, training me to, like, I guess just to do, I guess, basic cleaning stuff like I do now. Like, I do dishes, I cook and clean. It's, you know, no biggie, do laundry. It's always been like that since I learned at a young age, first grade, second grade. And I know some... But my friends nowadays, I really have a tough time doing dishes. They don't do that because their wife or somebody does it, you know? And they think it's crazy that I do all that stuff. And I was like, well, isn't everybody? I mean, doesn't everybody do dishes and clean and take out? I don't know. But so that's something I'm grateful that my aunt did, because it, you know, I just, it's easy to me. I just do it, you know? Yeah. It's just something I've been doing as a young kid. Mm-hmm. But also when I got older, though, like I had a grandpa, Ralph Lidlow, and he lived to be an older man, an elder, really old elder. He outlived my, of course, a lot of his children. But like, he had a lot of respect in the community. He was a dancer. He kind of did doctoring to people, helped people, prayed for people. Mm-hmm. And I thought, wow, he was, you know, my grandfather, and I really wanted to make him proud. and he would talk to us, and we'd want to, you know, make sure we were doing good and always hear good things that we're doing. And I always wanted to be a good boy. I didn't want to ever disappoint him, because he was really well respected. He treated me and my family really well, his grandchildren. And I didn't want to do anything to ever to hurt his feelings or make him not proud of me. So he always tried me to do better in things when I was younger, when he was alive. Mm-hmm. And also with Delvin Driver, that I lived with from sixth grade to my senior year in high school, mm-hmm. elementary to high school, mm-hmm. elementary, middle, high school. He was he's a well-known elder that does prayers and stuff for the Hadatsa, because he's Hadatsa. So mm-hmm. he does a lot of the Hadatsa. He speaks fluent Hadatsa, mm-hmm. does a lot of ceremonies and prayers for people too. And he was an aftercare counselor at Circle of Life for a number of years, and now he was teaching the Hadatsa language at the college up in Newtown, the Fort Berthold Community College. Mm-hmm. So a very highly respected man. You know, he was an old cowboy, saddle bronc rider mm-hmm. back in his day, just like my dad. Mm-hmm. And so right away, and I really took him as a father figure as I started getting older, and I wanted to make him proud, you know, because he didn't. He was always against drug and alcohols and stuff like that, and to this day, as old as I am, I can honestly say that I've never gotten drunk, I've never gotten buzzed, I've never gotten high with anything, with drugs or alcohol. So that was a lot to, of course, growing up. And then in a lot of it, I owe it to Delvin, Driver Senior. I take him as my father, as a dad, I call him dad today. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to make him proud. So that's something that's really rare amongst my own family and my relatives to say that. Now, it doesn't say I didn't have other bad habits. I used to eat a lot. I used to like to say buffets and the Golden Corrals and the, mm-hmm. all those kind of the China buffets or whatever. That was my only bad habit mm-hmm. before, anyways, mm-hmm. was to eat. But other than that, but those teachings were great. Like I said, I really wanted to make Delvin, proud. We did sweats and things, and how we prayed for, how he was willing to help people. Even though he was tired after work or from a long trip, he would go and people wanted prayer. Mm-hmm. or need it for their families, for whatever reason. Mm-hmm. And I'd go with him to help him carry his things in, or sometimes we had to do have a coals lighted up mm-hmm. For his medicines and stuff like that. And I used to love it that he'd go and help people, even though he was dead tired or didn't have much money. And he wouldn't ask for anything.
Yeah.
They had people try to give him stuff, and he would just say, well, I'll do it for, a handshake, mm-hmm. Or a cup of coffee, I don't want to, they don't really want to set a dollar limit. He said, I'll do it, for... If mm-hmm. a penny's all you can give, I'll do it for a penny, or I'll do it for a cup of coffee, or a yeah. handshake, or even a hug, he said, for the older ones. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, that's what he would tell people. And he never ever advertised what he did, just people knew that if they had certain issues or prayer, they would go to him. They would mm-hmm. ask him with tobacco and different things, or give him blanket or food. And he would go help out a lot of families, even when he was tired or didn't have much gas money, but he would never tell nobody that. But he always seemed to, make it. He would always seem to still go help people or whatever, and they would give him food, blankets, and sometimes they'd give him some coffee change or some gas money or whatever. Mm-hmm. A lot of times it was more than enough. He said thank you. He never asked for a certain amount. Mm-hmm. He really humble that way, and I was mm-hmm. always liked his demeanor. I always wanted to help people too.
Yeah.
So when I got older, I thought maybe in social work, helping families and helping kids and stuff like that, and never taking credit for anything, just giving credit away, mm-hmm. and always just willing to help, all the time, even if you were tired or if you're broke or just want to help people. So that's what I do today. I really like helping people. It makes me feel really good.
Yeah.
It's like an old natural high for me.
Yeah, yeah. Right. That is.
Mm-hmm.
It's rewarding, right?
Yep. Rewarding. Yep.
That's awesome. You mentioned something. Some of the stories I do, it's usually about addiction, or it's usually some kind of, and yours is foster care. So how did you, turn into a man, and you had father figure in your life, and that's what helped you?
Yep.
Kind of lead you into adulthood and that, and be successful. Was there somebody that kind of encouraged you to go to college?
Yeah, there was a program called the Casey Family Program. They had an office in Newtown, and they had an office here in Bismarck. And I was a Casey family kid when I was in my teenage years. I was 15, I think, I got into the Casey family program. And I got assigned a worker. Her name was Rose Nagel. And then also when I up and back in Newtown, and she was a relative of mine, as I understand. And she was helping me to be, I joined the IKP youth program. It's the Three Tribes Youth Council. That was through Jarrett Baker and Charlie Moran and Jason Tucrove. And then through Susan Paulson, she had the peer leadership group. So I joined those when I was in high school there. And it was all about, you know, advocacy or against drug and alcohol, you know, peer pressure from adolescents doing, you know, whether it's, you know, smoking or drinking or like having sex or just stealing. I mean, just it was to help prepare for that, help your other students to be more positive. And then they kind of brought culture into it too. And Delvin did a lot of sweats and things like that. They would ask him to do some cultural things for those programs. So those kind of helped out. I don't know how many skits I did or how many plays I did against drinking and smoking and using other drugs. And even like having kids at a young age, like in, you know, middle school or high school, doing those kind of skits and stuff. So that was kind of fun because we got to travel in the region to do those kind of plays. And then I was actually fortunate to go to Washington, D.C. a couple of times. And one time I went with Mike Cross to meet the president of the United States, Bill Clinton. I actually got to be in the White House and shake his hand and take pictures. And I got to have Delvin Driver Sr. come with me as my chaperone or my guest.
Yeah.
And that was really great to have him come. And so we got to see the president. We got to shake the hand that shook the world. That's what Delvin says. We got pictures of that too. So that was kind of, we got to, you know, through the IQB project, through Jarrett and Charlie and Jason's program, we got to travel to like Albuquerque to do some youth conferences like the Futures to Leadership program. We got to go to Traverse, Michigan to do some other conferences. We traveled a lot during middle school and high school for all these different peer leadership programs and stuff like that. So like Susie Paulson, Jarrett Baker, Charlie Moran, and Jason Tucro, and along with, you know, of course, my I call him Dad, Delvin Driver Sr., those were big influences in my life to be like, you know, I guess like a healthy person and like a good person to the community and stuff like that. And then I guess, you know, just making Delvin proud, making my aunt proud here in Bismarck, and then thinking of my grandpa and my dad and parents, like, I always wanted to do things that would, you know, if my dad was alive, I'd hope he'd be proud of me if I did these kind of things or whatever. Mm-hmm. Then my aunt, as I got older and out of high school, my aunt really pushed me to go to college, you know, even though she wasn't happy with me having a child at 19 years old, you know, but I wasn't going to be a typical, like some of my family and some of my relatives, and the typical stereotype is, you know, leaving the mother and you can go off and run. I didn't want to be like that. I guess I wasn't brought up like that. It was, to me, really, I couldn't not, when I seen my son being born and a little baby, I just was like, he was the world to me. I just could not, like, why? I couldn't see myself not being with him and taking care of him. I was like, that's crazy. I don't know how people can do that. So I ended up working actually when he was born. I got two jobs. One job at Target doing janitorial work from 10 o'clock at night to 6 in the morning, and then from 11:30 in the morning to 8 o'clock at night I would do telemarketing doing sales and stuff to be one of the top sellers to get more money so I could take care of my little guy and his mom. And that went on for that was for a summer, and then I worked at this place for 4.5 years, and we're raising, you know, getting money, paying bills, you know, actually getting money to buy a TV and VCR and stereo and stuff we needed. It was kind of cool because you've actually worked for that kind of stuff, like furniture. It was really neat to see that. And then after a while, unfortunately, me and my oldest's mom didn't work out. You know, she started to, you know, go to drinking and stuff like that, and so that's how we separated. And me and Gabriel left to go to Grand Forks, where I decided to get away from Bismarck, Manor, and just start a whole new life in Grand Forks, where I didn't know anybody. I just knew there was a big university up there. They helped out Native Americans a lot, the American Indian Student Service Program. And then meeting different professors and teachers, like there was a gentleman who's the director of the American Indian Student Service Center, Dr. Lee Janot, and he was, oh my God, a media mentor, reminding me very much of Delvin Driver Sr. But Lee and his staff sure encouraged us. And Lee today, I talk with him all the time, but he's a huge mentor for me. During my college years, at UND, and then meeting some other professors that were very influential, and of course meeting some really good friends that kind of shared my path. A lot of them, you know, some of them didn't drink or smoke, some of them were single family, some of them were married. But to be with other American Indians, Native Americans from other tribes, but closely knit, So I made friends for life with about six or eight of them. But from we have a couple of, one from Cameroon, Africa, one from Sudan, Africa. We had a lady who was Mexican from like Texas who came to go to school, and she was a single mom. And but we just had some really good friends. We had, I think we had each nationality except for somebody who was Asian. We didn't have, but we had all the other nationalities, and we even had a few non-Native Americans, like some white people, Caucasians. Mm-hmm. But there was about six or eight of us that went through undergrad together, and then we went through graduate school together, and just made friends for life. You know, they're almost like family now. Mm-hmm. But having that kind of positive peer leadership, you know, as far as education, you know, we were all had it tough. I don't know how many times I thought I wanted to quit college and quit because of my kids and stuff. You know, it's too rough. I got to get the money. I'm having it rough. I need to go back to work. Mm-hmm. But being there for one another, and Casey Family Programs too. I had another worker when I moved to Bismarck. Her name was Jessica Cantrell, and she really helped me apply to go to UND and stuff too. So all these positive people, I guess, kind of helped me, these professionals. And then, you know, some of the foster parents that I had here in Mandan, actually, Jim and Joyce Warnson were very influential in me, you know, as far as like taking care of my kids and family and working hard. You know, if you want to have them to have a good life and have something, unfortunately, that was out of your control. When I was little, I kind of grew up really poor. You know, we lived off commodities and we really sold, you know, thrift store clothes and things like that. We lived really kind of real poor, real poverty. But then I didn't want that for my boys. So I wanted to, of course, the idea is to get a good job, then you can, you know, to get a good education, to get a degree in something. And I didn't think I was going to get a college degree in anything before I started, because I didn't think I was really smart. And I didn't really think I was like I think I barely graduated high school with like maybe some C's, maybe a couple B's, but I wasn't no A student or whatever. But what really motivated me was my little guy. When I was 19, having a boy that really, he was my real motivation to, you know, to do better for myself, because I wanted him not to suffer or to live my life. You know, growing up poor, I wanted him to have nice things. I wanted him to have a nice home or the best I could, you know, just more better than me when I was growing up. So, but I'm not encouraging people to go have kids when they're 18 and 19, but I'm just telling you my story, that it really, that was my motivation. So when I was in college and I didn't want to finish my work, or I was tired or getting lazy and didn't want to do it, I'd look at my little guy. And like, I have to, because if I don't, this is going to affect my, if I get a poor grade, it's going to affect my financial aid. It's going to affect the money that we receive to help me to take care of him, take care of our bills and stuff like that. So I can't be lazy. I can't be like that, because I got to take care of this little guy. And so that was a big motivation for me through college and stuff. And I was up at, you know, 1, 2, 3 in the morning, 4 in the morning, getting a paper done that was due maybe the next day, studying and stuff like that. But I had to do it. And I didn't want to be, like I said, I wanted him to have a good life, the best I could do, better than I did. So
it sounds like you're talking about the need to break the cycles of poverty. Basically, you've seen that you wanted to bring financial security to your kids, to your family. So do you see the benefits of having, you know, to serve and focus on financial security services to Native Americans?
I would say that, and then like I would say like mentorship would be good, you know, to give mentorship. Because when I was growing up in Bismarck, I was part of the Big Sister, Big Brother program growing up here in Bismarck with my aunt. And I got to know two gentlemen that were really my older siblings when we were younger. We all took part of that. My aunt made us be in this program, and it was great because we had some really, I guess, big brothers, you could say. And that, actually, one that we still have contact with today. He was a, I still remember his name, Paul Booz. He was a in the military. He was a sergeant in the military or the Marines. And we actually talked to them last Christmas. And that was when I was like, geez, like 6, 7 years old, and I don't know how many years now, like 30 some years, we're still in contact with. So that was a huge program. And just people like that, you know, always encouraging us, even though we didn't have our father with us, you know, physically, or have a father. We had a lot of aunts, or we had a lot of uncles, and we had like a lot of, that kind of filled in for that, you know, and then people who mentored us or whatever. Because where I thought our Native American families, like aunts and uncles, kind of helped out a lot. And they kind of took on those roles for us or whatever when we grew up. Because our aunt was an elderly lady, when I was four. She was getting up there in age, and she was elderly. So it was a lot of tough for her to do some things for us. Mm-hmm. I always remember in elementary school in Bismarck, we were doing Mother's Day gifts and stuff for our moms. Mm-hmm. And everybody had these cool hearts and confetti and stuff, and all these really nice, we were making them. And then for me, I had aunt. Instead of mom, I had spelled aunt, A-U-N-T.
Yeah.
And that, so every Mother's Day activity when I was in elementary school was always for my Aunt Lois.
Yeah.
So,
she was okay by that.
Yeah, and she was okay by that. And of course, that was my, you know, of course, my mom passed away, but she was, that's what I did. And like I said, she kind of served both my mother and father figure. Because mm-hmm. she raised us when I was four until she passed away, mm-hmm. pretty much. Because even though if I wasn't living with her in my high school years, I would mm-hmm. always come back and visit her on the holidays or for the summers. Mm-hmm. And just to check on her, because after a while she started getting older and kind of getting sicker and stuff. So I always wanted to come back and check on her and be with her. So that was my whole motivation for living in the Bismarck Mandate where I was around my aunt, mm-hmm. just to make sure she was okay.
Mm-hmm. So now you've been living here in Bismarck how long?
Well, I've been back now for 2 years.
2 years. Yeah. Do you foresee it staying here, or do you foresee
I do, actually. I want to, I'm actually thinking about purchasing a house. I want to get a home here, and I want to have, because my oldest graduates next year from VHS, and I can't believe that. It just kind of makes me feel old, because I'm like, holy crap, I still like to watch cartoons with them. I eat cereal with them in the mornings, you know, the good kind of cereal. And I can't believe my oldest boy is graduating next year from high school, because it just went by so fast. Like, I can't believe that. I still remember when he was hiding in the kitchen cupboards. And, you know, I still have a big stink pamper on. I said, and that didn't seem long ago. I'm like, holy smokes, like how fast time flew.
Yeah.
So he'll be graduating, you know, next year from, or this coming year from BHS. Mm-hmm. So that's going to be exciting to see him, I guess, graduate. And then I just can't believe it was like, that's fast. And then my other boys, like I said, my second oldest is going to be in sixth grade, you know. Mm-hmm. And then my other boy is going to be a fourth grader. And then my little guy, Laz, is in first grade. So mm-hmm. it's like, wow, just time is going by fast. Mm-hmm. So, but yeah, I'm actually planning to stay here in Bismarck, Minnesota, to get a home here, and then probably stay here. But eventually, when I get older and stuff, I want to say more wiser, yeah. grayer, but I want to like actually go back to Twin Buttes,
yeah.
and get a home built out on my land and mm-hmm. live out there
mm-hmm.
when I get older. And possibly maybe run for council, too, like my father.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's great, Mark. Well, thanks for sharing. I think you had a really great story, and I had a lot to contribute. Thank you.
You're welcome.